successful. I should feel amazing. I should feel, at ease with myself. I should feel empowered, or I've achieved things. Like all these adjectives were attached to it. And yet there's this void.
My name is Paul Harvey, and this is Life, Passion, and Business. We're about helping you explore, finding your passion for life and the work that you do. But it's so much more than that. It's about finding clues to the big life questions. What does it mean to be successful? What is the meaning of life? If you're looking for more, then join me on this journey, where together we will discover through interviews, tools, and tips how to live life full of meaning, passion, and purpose. My guest on the show has always had a deep, implicit trust that life will support her. She's always been a positive being with the capacity to find the inner beauty in both life and death. Claudia Gusselman started taking pictures at just 4 years old with a little Kodak camera, and she still has the camera and some of the pictures. It was the start of a beautiful future career. She always wanted to be a photographer or a fashion designer. However, living in Germany, she followed her parents' advice. If you love something, you keep it to your hobby, otherwise you will lose your passion for it. So she went into social law. However, no matter how positively she looked at that career path, the free spirit in her could not endure it. Photography was calling, and her German boyfriend and her decided to go to Nigeria. There were no big plans. It was just go with the flow and see what happened in the moment. In Africa, she taught German to earn money and explored her passion for photography by visiting tribes and connecting with people while taking photographs. Back home in Germany, those images were displayed as huge panels at the Munich Stock Exchange, and they were seen by the Nigerian ambassador. It launched her career as a commercial photographer. Travelling the world for commercial and fashion photo shoots and getting the experience of life on four different continents. We get to hear the inside story of photography that is so much more than just travelling to nice places and taking pictures. It was fascinating to explore this for me. If you caught a short cast a few weeks back, you'll know that I have a story in photography, which was short-lived. After lots of travel, Claudia married and settled in San Francisco and built a solid career. And out of the blue, life changed for her. That 13-year marriage ended in a crazy, messy divorce. Her bubble was burst. The life she thought she would lead was gone. She lost so much with friends and connections, and it felt like a death. Sitting in her mud, it was time for something new, soul-wrenching and tough. While it was hard for her, the feelings inspired a curiosity about death and honouring endings. So she started reading and exploring more about it and decided to train as an end-of-life doula. Now, these are the people that support those approaching end-of-life and their transition into death. It totally spoke to me, she said, because there is a sacredness and a grace to dying that we as a society have lost. Claudia wanted to explore and support people to discover this sacred awareness. But while training, she realized there was so much more that she was learning could be applied to the midlife transition. It was about bringing the knowledge back into the now so that people could discover and work with it before the end. By the end of 2018, she completed her spiritual life coach training and founded Permission to Bloom, her coaching service. Today, Claudia is an empowerment coach supporting women through the midlife transition. You can tell we're enjoying this conversation as it flowed. So look, I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. So this is going to be a really interesting conversation with, I don't know where we're going to go, but I know she's got a cheeky sense of humour, so I think we could go anywhere.
Well, hi. Thank Hello. You for having me. Hi. Yeah, no, and you did pronounce my name right. So, you get a point.
Oh, look at this. Plus points before we start. Wonderful, wonderful. Look, Claudia, I know you are a photographer and fashion was your business. So tell me a bit more about that. How did we get there? So what was the journey for you? What did you want to do when you started out in life? What did you do when you got big?
Actually, I got my first camera when I was four.
Oh,
And
wow.
yeah, I always wanted to be a photographer.
Oh,
I
wow.
also wanted to be a fashion designer. And but I never wanted to work in fashion as a photographer, a fashion photographer. So yeah, where do we start? I'm a global being. I lived in four continents, and I started out with photography in Africa. And I took images of tribal people, which ended up at the Munich Stock Exchange, blown up huge. And the Nigerian ambassador came. And I guess that's how I sort of went on my journey.
Wow. So photography at four, that would have been a real film camera, wouldn't it, in those days, I guess? Or
Yeah, it was an old Kodak. My dad kept it, and I actually have it at my parents. It's so cute.
Do you have any pictures from that time?
I'm sure I could dig out some. Yeah, I don't
So
know. Maybe my dad has them as well.
look, obviously you started out you I obviously did you go follow the photography route professionally in like college and that sort of stuff?
No, because so I grew up in Germany, and my parents were like, "No, you love something, you keep it your hobby, because otherwise you're gonna lose your passion." And so, you know, when you're little, you follow your parents' advice. And so I studied social law.
Social law. That's something that,
Oh,
yeah,
yeah.
that's yes, it's a bit dry, maybe.
I was so dry. And, you know, but I'm a very positive being. So I was like, okay, this I at least know now. I never have to work in law or in an office. It's just not for
Did
me.
you go that? Did you go all the way through to become qualified as a
Not
lawyer?
complete. No, I didn't. No. And then photography swapped me away. A boyfriend and German boyfriend, and we decided to leave Germany together. And that's how we ended up in Nigeria and Africa. And that's when the photography was like, I'm going to be a photographer.
Wonderful, wonderful. So,
Yeah.
what was the passion in photography for you?
I guess it's the creative aspect because I am definitely an artist. I'm very creative and I love people. I'm also a people person and I love traveling. So all the things sort of combined together, and it was pretty remarkable on a because all this happened on a subconscious level. There was no conscious decision saying, I'm a people person and I love traveling. It's just all, you know, was not. It was just all happening and I just went on this path. But now, in the hindsight, when I look back, it makes all sense.
Yeah, looking back, joining the dots, as they say, that's when it all starts to fall into place, isn't it, in a way?
Right.
So what was it like in Africa? I mean, so that's, I mean, that I'm not sure how old you are, but that's a while ago, I imagine. And Africa was has been known to be a difficult country to travel in. I mean, was that an easy journey for you?
I don't know. So it's interesting because I think with whatever we do in life, once we put our intention there, it comes to us.
Right.
And so we decided we're moving to Africa, and suddenly everything around me became Africa. It was really, you know, suddenly, I mean, it was in Munich, living in Munich. I didn't even know how many African restaurants could be in Munich because it was just hilarious. But then you asked me if it was a difficult trip. No, because I was very open, and I also believe this is also one part of my life philosophy. If I go somewhere to live, I'm a guest in that country, so it's my choice. Nobody forces me to be
No.
there, and I really wanted to be there. And if I cannot accept or be there for whatever reasons, then I need to remove myself.
What were you doing there in Africa? Because it's all very well just going to travel a place, but I mean, like you've also got to try and find a thing to do in locations.
Well, the photography. I started the photography, and then I needed to support myself, so I became a tutor for German lessons, and I was working with the Goethe Institute. No, it's interesting journey. Thanks for asking me all these questions.
Well, it is fascinating. And obviously, you work with the Goethe Institute, which is also interesting because my son was in the Steiner School, so I kind of have, our family kind of has a knowledge of the Goethe Institute and the kind of work that he did.
Right.
I don't know if that changes how the language process worked with him, but
Yeah. No, you know, it was fascinating to I mean, I really was totally soaking it up to go and meet tribal people with in the middle of the bush and photograph them. And even though we didn't speak the same language, to connect and yeah, take a portrait and have this precious moment. I mean,
Were they okay with that? Because it's like, because I mean, although you're just there taking photographs, you are taking, what were you giving them in return? You're going there and you're taking their image as such, you know, it's like.
right. Actually, I did come prepared. I came prepared. I gave them often a Polaroid in exchange or a toothbrush.
I can imagine a toothbrush would be quite valuable, actually.
Yeah, I thought if I should give something, I should give a toothbrush.
Yes.
Yeah.
Clever idea.
Oh.
So your pictures became famous because they ended up you ended up having these African photographs were successful for you and started your career.
Well, yeah, it did. I mean, it's just became, you know, there's so many stepping stones in all of our careers, and that was definitely one. I had these portraits. I had an exhibit at the Munich Stock Exchange, and they were big. And then Nigerian ambassador came. Then we moved on to Indonesia, and then I went into travel photography, which is different. I mean, I went to resorts and photographed a lot of beautiful places I went and you got to see. Then I moved to Singapore and I photographed CEOs, more people, a different kind.
So was this you driving it, or were you paid to go this? Were you just looking for photographs, and this was just you going there with your camera and hoping to sell pictures afterwards?
No, and the resorts would hire me, magazines would hire me, and then in Singapore, definitely design companies, advertising companies would hire me.
So you built a career out of this. So that's a freelance career you built.
Yeah, and then I moved
So
to
yeah, that because
America.
sorry to push that, because photography is very creative, and a business career is very different. I guess this was your law stuff coming through, your practicality stuff coming through to get yourself up into that process.
Well, I became a commercial photographer. I know I wanted to make a living out of photography, and so I wanted to be hired and I want to execute concepts, and that's sort of really what I went
How
for.
does that work? Because it's like, because obviously the design, the agency, the people want a particular photograph, and the photographer goes, "Yeah, I can see you want that one, but I want that one." How do you balance that?
Well, it's interesting. Thank you for that question. So I'm hired. I have a certain style. I'm hired for my style, and the client and or the agency has a concept, and they trust that I am giving them what they want. I mean, it's a process before you even get the project, right? You have to make a presentation. Sometimes these days you have to do a treatment write-up. I mean, it's definitely you earn your job. You have to be, you know, good with words and presentations. But there's
This
a
is very
trust.
difficult to, because you're trying to describe a photograph.
Yeah, I after well, they have maybe a presentation, and then they ask me, why would I be the best photographer to hire for this project? So I basically have to sell myself and say, well, if you hire me, this is what I do, and this is my style. Here's my backup images, and I'm an amazing, you know, talented photographer, and I'm witty, and I'm gonna be fun on the set, and so you're going to get what you want and beyond. It's fascinating. It's really like a bitch. You have to really, you know, sell it.
I mean, the reason I point this out is I remember I was in co corporate for 20 years, and I did product development for that organization, and we did quite a lot of photography. We always did photography of any new products and came up, and we had this range of furniture, I think it was, that we had designed a concept picture that we wanted for the magazine, for this catalog. But when it came to photograph it was very difficult to get it to fit, because the things weren't quite as the proportion that had already been thought of, or and the perspective was kind of wrong. So the photographer ended up having to bend the perspective. He had a plate camera and he was literally bending the perspective to make it fit.
And it's like, yeah, this is, he said, this is rubbish. We shouldn't be doing this, but this is what you want. So we ended up, I mean, the picture did work out in the right, but because all the verticals in the room were going wrong because of this. Anyway, yeah, it was really interesting to see his problem trying to match our desire, our need. It was quite fascinating watching that.
Yeah, you are. I mean, I think of myself as a creative problem solver because the client comes with this idea and then I get to basically execute it and problem solve whatever they want. And, you know, it's conversations in between. So it's a very interesting process. And then I have my team, you know, stylist, hair and makeup, whatever, prop stylist, you know, assistant. And then
fashion, aren't we? So we've got a whole nother layer on top. You've got the model as well. And you've got the rough course. Wow.
Yeah. And I feel like I like to say that at the end, I give birth, or we all collectively give birth to this idea, to the image is the grand finale.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful process.
It does sound very exciting. And I guess that's because that's what it is. Yeah, people assume that being a fashion photographer is an exciting life. I guess you've traveled a lot and it's brought a lot of opportunity for you.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting because the photography has changed so much because of the way we live now with social media. I mean, the work goes still in the image, but the image is so short-lived because before we at least had tangible magazines. We could just take it and pick it up again and look again. Mm. But now what do we have? It's all online and often it's in a feed and it goes down. And then after 2 days, nobody remembers anything, but the work still went in it. It's interesting.
Yes, of course, absolutely. Mm. And I guess it's also that the other side of photography these days is that everybody thinks they're a photographer because they've all got a camera on their phone.
That's right. And it looks great if you have it just on your phone in Instagram size, it looks awesome. But then, you know, when you want it on your website, suddenly all the little or big things which didn't light well come out. And that's a whole nother conversation. I went through many of those things.
It is.
Startups.
Okay. You can really you can tell I'm getting geeked out on the photography because I actually love photography and it was a career I never took. It was a career I enjoyed as a teenager, but never really followed it up. So there we go. So where did you go from here? Because I know you've got other strings to your bow, other things that have happened in your life. What's been the journey on from there?
Well, so we ended up in San Francisco, I guess, and that's the photography, you know, America. Mm-hmm. I lived there for a while. And then I went through this crazy divorce, which put me down in the gutter.
How long had you been married?
13 years.
Oh, that's a long time, isn't it?
Yeah, but you know, everything in life just happens as it happens.
Well, and indeed. I mean, from the back, you can look back at it and go, it's fine. But when you're in it, it's not so pleasant, is it?
No, it wasn't pleasant. And I felt like I was dying because my entire life, the way I envisioned it, the way it was set up, my community, everything collapsed over me. And but I went through this process and I got really intrigued about death. And I was like, wow, you know, what is death all about? Because I literally felt I was dying. I mean, not like in a literal way of dying, but inside of me, you know.
Was this because you didn't want the divorce or because of the divorce? What was the...
It came suddenly. It came unexpected. Okay. I wasn't prepared. Okay. I didn't realize how much I was out of touch with myself.
Okay.
It could just everything came together.
Yeah. I guess if you're fighting and you know there's something wrong, then it's not a surprise. But when it becomes as a total surprise, that is like a bereavement. That's a death.
Yeah, but you know, it's interesting because does it always come as a total surprise or did I just not see it?
Oh, well, that's a good question. Only you would know the answer to that one.
You know, did I not want to see it? Was I just being illusionary or blinded by my own whatever it was, right? So it's a fascinating, or I was in denial. So it's a fascinating observation, but regardless, curious as I am, I got really intrigued by death. So, and then synchronicities as
okay,
had it.
Okay, so your marriage died and you called that a death. And so you started in exploring death. Okay.
Yeah. I got so intrigued about it. I read a lot of things about death and realized that maybe I should become an end-of-life doula. No.
That's a strange connection, but yeah, okay.
It's just how it just totally spoke to me. It felt so right. Because there's this, maybe because, I'm going to just delete that maybe out. There's a sacredness and grace to dying, which we as a society have also let go of.
Oh, yes.
And so I felt in my own process that I needed to engage in this. And I've realized what is missing in the society and what maybe I can offer back. So I did this education. And then I was like, oh, I don't know if I really want to work totally at the end of their life because I'm not at the end of the life. Maybe I need to take this knowledge and all what I am learning here and bring it back to the here and now, to you and me, to whoever I'm talking to in the middle of the life and share it forward so we can make these changes now instead of really when it is too late at the very end. That's what I did.
Yeah, so that's the thing, isn't it? When we celebrate birth, but life is a cycle, and not that I'm saying we need to celebrate death, but we do in some way. It is a celebrate. Right, I know it's a tough kind of call it a celebration, but it is part of the cycle.
Is. Actually, it is. You know, and I mean, you're from Scotland. You have beautiful rituals and initiations in your heritage and your culture. Also,
Scots do. I'm a Londoner, so I wouldn't know about them. But
I thought you are in Scotland.
I am in Scotland. I live in Scotland, but I'm a Londoner.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
But yeah, they do have rituals. I mean, I think the death rituals are more established in the likes of Ireland, Catholic cultures.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, they have professional people that will control the. You know, they used to have professional people that would actually be there, holding a keen or a whale over the body.
Right, yeah. But all I'm saying is, I think that we in our Western societies also had way more rituals, and the rituals were much more focused on the celebration of the life, and slowly but surely, I feel it becomes less and less and less. And we handed, as a society, the death over to hospitals and medical services. And therefore, when now we hear the word death, we shriek and it becomes like, instead of, okay, there is this ritual, there's something sacred, there's a celebration. You know, I feel like there needs to be a change in the conversation, and it needs to be, we need to have a different approach.
And I guess part of that is because we've medicalized life so much.
Yeah.
And the skill of our medical doctors is so great. They can pretty much prolong life forever.
Right.
Or they can prolong the body forever, pretty much, depending on how much money you've got to pay for it. So consequently, anyone who is approaching that end will be in medical intervention of some sort. Mm-hmm. And so that's probably why most people are kind of going, that's not so pleasant.
Yeah. No, and you know, it's fascinating the things you learn when you study to become an end of life. For instance, did you know that the medical machines, the machines we're all hooked up to make the peep, peep, is out of any tonal range of music? It's beyond. If you would have, there's no musician who ever uses these tones. So who came up to make this sound so horrific? Can you imagine? You're already sick. You're in the hospital under a neon light. And then you have this shrieking sound next to you, this machine, which gives you your pulse or your heart monitor. But
maybe it was set up by people that wanted to make sure it was heard. And so they chose a sound that didn't actually get blended in with anything else.
Okay, we could give them the benefit of the doubt, but
or maybe they say that as a torture instrument to torture those that are dying.
but I feel like there's a lack of awareness. I mean, really, whoever came was probably an engineer. I'm nothing wrong with engineers. We love engineers, But I mean, really thinking a little bit about this, could we not have a different sound? And it's still under this moment. It's there's one company, I forgot the name, it was a US company. They actually assessed this. They went, they got this, there was this research done, and then they were like, okay, yeah, that's right. We really should change the tone because it's possible. It can be something else, it can be something pleasant.
Yes. Perfect. Well, wonderful. So how, so you became a death doula. What happened next?
Well, then I was like, okay, I have all this knowledge now, and what do I do with it? And then I went and became a certified spiritual life coach because I needed some extra tools.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started Permission to Bloom, which is my coaching practice.
Right. So what does a spiritual life coach do?
Right. In this case, me. Work with women in midlife, and I would like to think of myself as an empowerment coach. And so we assess, you know, midlife. I think it's a transition. I don't say crisis, but people feel like they're dropping into a crisis because it's another just big chunk of our life. We're moving into a whole new phase. But a lot of women have had the children are adults or becoming teenagers, they're less wanted. Even so, you identified through the children, basically, right? Maybe your marriage falls apart. Maybe you have reached the height of your job and you feel burned out. And there's this suddenly this hole inside of you. And then it's like, now what?
Yes. Yes.
And that's where I come in.
I recognize that.
You recognize that?
Yeah, I do. So That's how this podcast started. I was kind of going, well, is this it? Is this what it's about? And I think a lot of people get to that place. It's like, well, hang on a minute. What's it all for? Why are we doing this?
Yeah.
Which is why this was started, why I set this podcast up, to ask questions of people like you to give me the answers.
Well, you know, I think it's a beautiful inquiry, and it's, to me, it's also, it's again, it's a transition. And if we view it as a transition, then we have an opportunity in front of us to grow and reframe and change and become whoever we need to be. If we see it as a crisis, it becomes a finite box we're sitting in and we're struggling to get out.
See, I reckon we see it as a crisis because of that kind of potentially cultural thing, or potentially how we set it up in our heads, that, you know, life, you get to a certain position or status in life, and then that's it. You've fixed your life. It doesn't change now. You know, you've got the house, you've got the kids, you've got all these things, and now life is sorted. And then, of course,
so we think.
And of course, you don't realize that life ain't sorted. It's because life will change. It has to change and evolve. And right. And I think the crisis bit is the resistance to change.
That is true. But who is telling us that it is a crisis? It's again, well, society tells us this.
Well, it's the pictures and the things that we have in our head that have determined that. And they could have come from society, family, or wherever, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm a very inquisitive person, as I mentioned, Korea. So, I mean, for instance, also, I always question these words, you know, that we have success. What does that really mean?
Well, that's the next question for you. That's the next question, isn't it? What does success mean to you? You're stealing my questions.
You know, but it's so fascinating because so there we are. We have these, two, you know, we have people, women, whoever, right? And we're like, oh, I'm successful. I should feel amazing. I should feel, you know, at ease with myself. I should feel empowered, or, you know, I've achieved things, like all these adjectives were attached to it. And yet there's this void, there's this emptiness. So then it becomes really, so what does success really truly mean? And when you ask, when you got quiet with yourself and you start journaling and you really are honest, you realize often that success, the one you chase, is just because you did it because somebody else told you so. But you never found out. You never inquired what it really means to you. And then that's, you know, that's where the work starts. That's where we go get, we can go in and we can find out, okay, maybe success is that I'm in a very healthy relationship, that I manage, that I am seen,
So this is great theory, and I know this is great theory because exactly how I would approach this, but I need to turn this back to you. So there you are, successful photographer, you know, traveling the world, married. Was that your success model? Is that where you thought you needed to be?
No. Actually, I'm also, aside from being curious, I think I'm quite humble. And I always
That's where you were before your divorce.
So the photography. Let me speak first to the photography. Oh my God, I love this conversation. It's awesome. Thank you. the photography, I always felt that knowing as an artist, you can be a rock star today, but tomorrow you can be nobody. Because that's how art works, right?
You're only as good as your latest photograph.
Yeah, or people love you today, and then tomorrow your style is out of date because somebody else came and said that person has a better style or whatever, right? So I always felt that I've never chased any trends, and I was like, I'm just doing me. I'm just doing, and if my style is out of the trend right now, so be it. So I was very aware of that. Success on the photography work level it never was an external thing. I mean, for me, it was always like, no, I my community. And I think this is why I crashed so hard, because I believed in a conscious relationship and I believed in my community, and in the future I was sort of building, and that was ripped away from me for, you know, I'm not pointing the fingers, where it's a dance, like you and this together with your partner, but you know, life happens, but it just was not meant.
Why did you lose your community as well? Were you that interlocked between your partner and everything? It was a business together with all your friends and that sort of stuff.
I mean, you know, if you have if you go through, usually you lose some friends.
Yeah, of course.
Because people take sides.
People have to choose. They can't be in both sides, can they?
Yeah, you know. So that's what happened. And but again, I mean, looking back, or while I was sitting in my own mud, I realized, you know, it's just time for something new. And maybe I was very lucky in that sense that I have reinvented myself multiple times over, that I lived in different countries around the world, that I went through this process of, okay, again, something new, let me make new friends, you know, a new life, a new identity, a new me. So maybe it helped me. And yet it was maybe the most soul-wrenching process I went through. But because it went so deep, I also got to grow so much.
So what is success for you now? What does it mean now?
It is definitely my community. If I know that I have people around me who see me, and I can see others, and friends, you know, how many friends do we really value, like really, really good friends do we have, do we need? Usually it's five, right? Maybe maximum, like really solid. So
I think they're quite hard to find really good friends.
Yeah, it's, you know.
I think I have two good friends, I would call good friends. And yet, even that, you know, it's hard.
Yeah,
and COVID's made it very hard to maintain that. I mean, we'll drop back into it when it's all over and done. Right. But it is interesting, isn't it? How friends.
Yeah. So, and then also, I feel like I'm knowing that I'm really on my path. I feel COVID gifted me this also, like in a more face on way. I live in, usually in Venice in LA, and then I came here to support my parents, and I got this gift of spending this incredible, not easy, but quality time with my parents, to change my relationship with my parents, to bring it updated into adult relationship, support them. That is amazing. We did a lot of work together to arrive where we are now. And Just to live the love, actually. I don't know. I'm just like, even this conversation with you, it just nurtures my soul. It's beautiful. And I feel like this is all we have. This is, I walk away and I feel like, wow, you know, this was already an amazingly rich day because I got to exchange with you. And shouldn't that be, isn't that success?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Having good conversations is always success for me.
Yeah.
Wow, that's, I mean, yeah, it is that point, isn't it? About, for me, I guess for me, success is about when the internal picture and the external pictures meet.
The external and the internal.
Yeah. When the two things meet, that's how I value success now, I think.
Right. So that's what you're doing now with the podcast. Yeah.
It is.
So you feel completely aligned with yourself because you feel like you're true to yourself.
I think there's some room for growth and change, but I think we're on the right path.
Right.
That's where I think I am at the moment.
But that's so beautiful to know that. That's so powerful, right?
It is.
Wake up in the morning and it's those simple things.
What is fascinating about it, isn't it, is it's the doubt that comes in from other people's perspective of how I lead my life. And I don't know they have a perspective, but it's how I think they might think that I'm having. You know, that is that
right,
double, isn't it? It's like
the inner critic.
Yeah.
you should be doing this because hey, this is not successful enough.
Yes, you should be doing that, absolutely.
I think we all have that, but you know, when we come to realize and we befriend our inner demons and dragons and critics, and they have a purpose, right? They keep us sometimes in check, but as long as they don't take over our life, then it's okay.
It is indeed. So Claudia, what is your contribution to the world?
My contribution? Well, now as I'm on this path, I really, truly believe this is, I found my purpose, my, this is where I'm going. All my gifts are coming together. As I said in the beginning of the conversation, I feel, you know, being a photographer, a people person, having engaged and with so many varied people throughout my life and established a trusting relationship very quickly because of the photography. Now I'm taking this to a whole nother level. And if I can help somebody to peel back a layer and step more authentically into themselves and live therefore a more fulfilled life, then my job is done.
Do you find that in your photography more, or in your doula work, or in your coaching work?
It's now in this new work, in the permission to bloom, in my coaching work, in the work I'm doing with the women, how I help them reframe and access their roadblocks, how we take it apart, and how this empowerment helped. I see it when this process, I'm just a facilitator. I'm a vessel. It's the work has to come from everybody else. Right. But I can help to build the tools. But when I see what happened and this undoing and becoming, it's so powerful.
Do you use photography in this process at all?
I am. It's a whole new thing. Yes.
Because I can just imagine taking a photograph of when you first meet someone, and then taking a new photograph, and the energy would be different in how they, and how, it's going to sound weird, isn't it, really? But I would imagine as someone changes internally, the muscle structure in their face or their body changes. And so how they look starts to change.
But even so, it's the way we talk about ourselves.
Maybe
it's not even as visible. Maybe it is in the way we express our face. We are more relaxed, we smile, we're more content, you know, our body language, the way we sit, and so on. Yes. But the way we judge ourselves is so, so powerful. Because we all know it. We wake up, we're in a bad space, and we're like, oh my God, never gonna look in the mirror ever again. This is it. Done. And then, you know, there's a good day and we feel empowered, we feel great, and we're like, well, it's not that bad actually. I'm good.
It's interesting, you know, about that one. I mean, mostly women and body consciousness, of course, because that's a big thing for women as such.
Oh, yeah, because you know, there's so much pressure.
Well, of course, and you're in the fashion industry, so you know it firsthand, you know.
Oh, I know it firsthand. And, you know, that's a whole nother project I started before COVID, and it's on hold right now. But every month I started taking a picture of, and you know, of a woman over 60, and I did this photo shoot, fashion-y shoot with her, and then, you know, started this whole series just to show how beautiful women are. Because
I'd love to have some links to that. That would be really fascinating.
Okay. Yeah. And, you know, how powerful women are when they really step into their power. But society, you know, why is it that we buy everything? And again, I mean, it's judgy. It should really change. Why is it that I have to buy every clothing item, you know, on a model which is 18 years old or 20? And it's slowly changing, but it's so ever so slowly, right? And it's just so messed up.
I always chuckle why women get caught out for buying kind of beauty creams and fashion and skin products from 18-year-old images on the screen, from women who are, yeah. It's like, yeah.
But there is the brands, it's slowly changing. A few brands are now embracing age, and they're willing to show the age women who are aging in whatever the bodies is, right? It's the most normal thing.
Mm.
No more photoshopping, embrace the wrinkles and so on. But up to the big brands still, it's all about the perfect. It's perfect, perfect. And how are you perfect with 18? No, because I shoot so many of 18 and 20 year olds, and they still are not perfect, because nobody is perfect. So then Photoshop comes in, and we.
Who determines perfect? That's
exactly.
I mean, I have this conversation. Of course, we're into tangents today. I have this conversation, you know, with my wife, because my mother loves to do interiors and rooms and things, and we both know this. Like, I will. We have this joke about cushions. I will put the cushions on the sofa, and she'll go, and she'll just move them, and it looks better. Because I can't do that. But it's like, I don't see the difference. But what makes the difference is that thing about what makes, you know, this, you know, what makes something perfect the way it is. And it really is interesting for me, is about that, you know, we look at something and that's right, that isn't right. How do we get that? Where does that come from?
I don't know. I mean, I can only speak for myself, but when I take pictures and I know when I'm done, I know when I got the shot, I'm like, that's it. And it can happen very quickly, or sometimes I'm like, no, I feel like I didn't get it yet. I don't even need to shoot more. And then I'm like, that's the shot.
Mm.
Or even when you dress a set, or, you know, I mean, with the team, it's the same thing. I'm like, nah, that doesn't feel right. I don't know. It's this creative process where we sort of align with our, everything comes together, our senses. Maybe it's mathematics.
It might be mathematics. It might be that. Yeah. And it could also be something in the limbic brain of how we're made up. It could be something that certain things are attractive to us in a certain way. I mean, who knows? There could be so many things that are imperceptible about it. But it is fascinating that there is a right and a wrong, that there is that looks right, that looks wrong. And I love the whole like concept, like, you know, I love the whole thing about it, the fact that some things do work and some things don't. But I get very frustrated when I can't get it right. There we go.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So
yeah.
Back to aging,
yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But I mean, your contribution to the world is your photography, and obviously, as you say now, it's that contribution is how you help women rediscover themselves. Wonderful.
Yeah, I really feel so strongly, and I really also, I mean, I want to be a voice around changing the conversation around death. I really do. I think it's, you know, there's a stigma, there is a taboo, and we believe we live in such a free world, but money, sex, and death are still not talked about. Where do we learn these things? We don't learn them at school. We learn them from our family of origin. And if our family of origin has a bad relationship to these things, we carry them forward. And then we wonder why we don't know any better.
Well, death got medicalized and it also got hidden, didn't it? Because I mean, like, certainly 100 years ago, everybody knew someone dying every month. You know, someone died around you constantly. You're always going to a funeral somewhere because that was just the way of things were, and it was normal.
Yeah, and there's, you know, I mean, I talked about this recently also, because when you go in Germany, and maybe this is in Scotland similar, the old houses, they had a bigger doorways because the death would be celebrated at home. The casket would be brought in. And I remember I was very little, and then, but my grandma and my grandpa, there was somebody in the bigger family dying, and they would be at my grandma's house, and there would be snacks and schnapps, and, you know, and it would just be a celebration. We'd all gather, they would gather, and then maybe you take a little shot of something, your awkwardness goes away, and you tell stories about the person. And isn't that beautiful?
Yes.
Why are we not doing that anymore?
Yes. Yeah. It is beautiful. And no, I don't know why we don't do it anymore. But as I said, we've hidden it away somehow. But maybe people like yourself So there's quite a few people in the industry now that are moving towards change. They certainly are moving towards change. She's not a podcast guest. I can see her face, but I can't remember her name. I have interviewed her before. She does about death stories, and she runs a burial ground. Oh, how annoying that her name was gone. Never mind. I'll have to think about that one and put some links to her. But there are a lot of people around that are doing also amazing stuff around this.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad to hear that this is catching on everywhere.
I mean, one of her stories is wonderful. She's not a death doula, but she does that kind of work. And she was invited to a house to see a family because the mother was dying. And she arrived at the door, and she was met by the siblings, and they said, "Oh, thank you so much for coming. I'm really pleased you're here. Now, the thing you must know is that Mum does not know she's dying. So I don't want you to don't tell her she's dying, because she doesn't know. So just be with her, but don't tell her." So anyway, she goes into the room, and the old lady says, "Close the door, dear." She says, "Now, what you need to know is that my children don't know I'm dying, and you mustn't tell them."
Oh, my God, that's an awesome story. Wow. It's real. It is so real. It's because we shy away from this, you know, conversation. But if we can go there, and then we can be together and we can hold each other, then it creates this intimacy. Then it creates beautiful memories for the people who are left behind. Then we treasure this moment, the last moments we had, and we looked into each other's eyes. And, you know, I can get really passionate about this, because this is what we yearn so much in this life right now. When COVID shows this to us, we want intimate connection. We want
deep. And COVID doesn't allow that towards the end.
No, and, you know, and this is how we're wired.
Yeah.
And then we're so afraid of being vulnerable, being seen in our imperfection, which we all are. Yeah, it's just.
Have you been with many people dying? Have you been actually at the end of
it? A few, yeah.
And were they clients or close friends? How did that work?
Both. And, you know, it's a very individual story. It's heart wrenching. It's heart warming. It's everything I don't know. It's just. I think the saddest thing is when people say, "Oh, I wish I would have, you know, my daughter, I wish my daughter could be here, and I would not have fought with her for 20 years," or, you know, things like that. And on that's where my work again comes in. I really want us to engage on and practice dying, because we die every day. You know, like a divorce, a job, whatever, you know, these are bigger deaths in our life. We need to let it go, put it down, honor it, grieve it, and know that there's a void, there's but also know, understand that we love that. And when we really engage on these topics, okay, this has value to me. I need to say this relationship or this person was very important. That shows me also the quality of my life, my love, that everything, my heart is working. These are beautiful things. It's not just all negative, right? And then we know we can make these changes and hopefully live a more authentic life. And then when we come to this very end, to the last big death, we can say, you know, I lived as well as I could.
Yes, yes, yes. Wasn't that a blast?
Wasn't that a blast? Wow, you know, I have amazing memories and I showed up. Yeah. I showed up for this life, for this short, precious life. I think that's my goal.
I think I've already asked this question, but I think you've been very, very, very thing. But I'm going to ask it anyway. What's the one question I should have asked you that I haven't done?
Whoa. What one question you should have asked me? I don't know. We had so many great questions. You asked me a lot of great questions. I'm put on the spot.
Good.
You put me on the spot, and I admit it. I'm being vulnerable right here, right now.
Okay. So let's try that a different way. What is the one question you want people to ask you?
Want people to ask me?
Yeah. You see, it can be a feeder question, can't it? That can be a question that I'm so pleased you asked me that question because I want to tell you about this. What is the one thing you want people to say to you, ask you?
Maybe, how do you arrive? Actually, no, thank you for asking that or turning it around this way. Because people do, they say, oh, you're so positive. I mean, how do you get there? Or how do you, because I always say, I trust, I completely, and this is really true, I trust my journey. I really embrace, I've learned to embrace whatever comes my way, you know, and to turn it around, even if it's something challenging. And people ask me like, how do you get there? And I think it's a beautiful question, and I think it's not easy, but it's about really going inward and grounding and doing the work and showing up every day to myself. And it's not perfect. I know it's not perfect.
Well, there is no perfect, is there?
No, there's no perfect.
There's just is really, and perfect is a judgment. You know, perfect is a judgment about something. But what perfect is a stick to beat ourselves with. and I've got a perfect stick as well, and I'm pretty good at beating myself with it. That's fine.
Maybe having spine, having an opinion, showing up and voicing the opinion, having courage to say no. That's another really powerful thing. I think we need to learn again. Be like, no, thank you, but thank you. But, you know, this is not for me. And I think there is something really powerful in the power of no.
Yes, the power of no. Yes. I've had that conversation as well before. It's brilliant. Yeah. Brilliant. Because to say no, to say yes to something, you've got to say no to something. So it's really.
Right. Yeah.
We can't do it all.
No. But I think that's another thing we often, you know, we have forgotten or. Because we're afraid that then we say no, we offend somebody, but maybe we gain respect when we say no.
Yeah, sometimes it's hard to say no, but I agree. Yeah.
And it's the cushion on the sofa, for instance.
Indeed, it has to.
No, I don't like this.
We have to practice no sometimes. Yeah, so this is the opportunity that you have to talk about who you want to talk to. If people want to connect with you, how do they do so? And who do you work with, or who do you want to talk to?
Well, connecting with me is best probably via Instagram. It's permission_to_bloom, and then my website, which is permissiontobloomcoaching.com. And I want whoever feels intrigued, whoever, somebody's this conversation steers something, They can contact me and I will be there, and I'm happy to answer any questions, and maybe we do some work, maybe we just exchange, maybe, I don't know, but I'm here.
And so you're gonna, well, the links for those lovely women you've taken photographs of, the 60, in their 60s, that will be on the website. Well, you'll get
Okay,
that
yeah,
link
I
to me.
can send those
I
links
would
to
love
you.
that. Are you still a photographer for hire? Are you still, you are?
I am, yes. You know, I hope that it's deemed essential again soon. I mean, basically out of the lockdown, right?
So is that just your name? Yeah, is that under your name?
Yeah.
Do you have a photography website for that?
Yeah, I do. It's claudiagotzelman.com.
Lovely. So that link will be there too. And are you on other social channels as well?
Insta is
Just Insta, because I guess it's
main.
because of photography.
Yeah, I'm a very visual person, so.
So, Claudia, I come to my last question that I ask all of the more guests, and it's that question because it's like we're born as animals on this planet, and only humans, in a way, are arrogant enough to think we were placed here for a purpose or a reason, or maybe not. So there's a meaning to it all, or is there not a meaning to it all? What, for you, what is the meaning of life? What are we here for?
To love, to step into our love and live the love we're meant to be. There's no doubt for me. We're all love. We're born out of love. We're love when we are make the first scream into this world. And we, at the end of life, wow, yeah, we come back to love. And I get really emotional just saying that. So I don't know why we are born love in the middle. We should really dare to love more. And I don't know why we're so afraid, because there's abundance, right? The more we love, the more we gain, the more we receive. It's infinite. So
So
that's my answer.
that's a wonderful, simple answer, and I can see, because I can see you, I can see how true it is for you. And Claudia, thank you so much for being with me today. It's been such a joy to have this conversation with you, and
Oh my God, thank you.
thank
It
you.
was, yeah, we sat windy deep with some side turnoffs. We did it successfully.
Well, we did it. I did my usual rabbit hole thing, but that's fine.
I love it.
I love the
I
journey.
know. Yes, I do. I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for having me. And my definitely, I'm coming back to this. My day feels enriched because of the conversation I had with you. So I'm grateful.
So is mine. Thank you. All the best. And that was Life, Passion and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest, Claudia Gusselman. If you'd like to connect with Claudia, and I suggest you do because she's a bit of a scream, you will find her at permissiontobloom.com. You'll find her on Instagram, permissiontobloom. If you're interested in the photography of older women and general photography, look out for claudiagusselman.com. And there's also an Instagram account under Claudia Gusselman. And do check out the Instagram stuff, because she and I have been doing a few lives, and we'll do a few more probably. All of those links will be available at the website lifepassionandbusiness.com. And while you're there, do check out the resources tab. If you are interested in exploring midlife coaching or focus coaching, the details are there. Plus, there is the 5 questions workbook. So that's it from me for this week. So remember, if you are enjoying this podcast, if you're enjoying any podcast, please support your content creators with likes, shares, and reviews, because that's how this ecosystem grows and how people like yourself find a good podcast, of course. Thank you so much for being on this journey with me, because it would be nothing without you. And as always, thank you for your time and attention. I'll catch you next time. All the best.